Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello and welcome to the Weird Things After Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Mr. Justin Robert Young.
Hello.
Mr. Bryce Castillo.
Hello, everybody. Welcome. Thank you for having me on Andrew Main.
Yes.
Your name.
I don't know what that means.
Saying your name.
Oh, so on Andrew. Thank you. Okay.
Thank you for having me on.
I didn't see the comma. I didn't understand it. All right. Fine. We'll just go right to a question from probably, one of our most consistent listeners and question askers and appliers. We're a fan of him. This is Mr. James Harrison, Pickpocket Magic. Mm-hmm. And man, this is a great one. This is a great question. He says, I've taken a good hard look at myself and noticed that I'm terrible at productivity. I get it in spurts throughout the week, but I want to be better focused. Do you all make lists to check off? If do you use your smartphone or computer or a physical one with an erase board or a big pad of paper? Would love to hear what Bryce has to say about this, considering he has to herd three cat type hosts. Side note, great to meet both Brian at Magic Live and meeting Bryce's dad for dinner.
Oh, cool. He was at that dinner too. Very fun.
Oh, cool.
So one thing that I will do is I have a little whiteboard next to my computer at my office or, in my apartment. And so I'll write down things that I need to do there, whether it's usually stuff throughout the week, right? Like, okay, I have to have an ad for this week. I've got, we've got this shoot coming up. I got to finish these things. And that is enough of a nagging sort of thing where it's like right next to me so I can see it. And I know, okay, I really just need to like bite the bullet and do, knock these things off or like set a date on there and say, okay, this is going to be Wednesday. This is going to be the day that I do this. And just that little bit of accountability helps me a lot. I don't know. What do you guys do?
Justin?
I have come to use Trello.
Okay.
Which is a group organization tool that is very popular out here in the Bay Area. I do not use it in the way that it was probably meant to be used, where there's multiple people interacting with it. But I have tended to use it as a way to just keep track of things I need to do versus things that I've done. There's a mobile app and a desktop, client for it. So I have a fairly poor kind of organizational skills in general. But in terms of just making sure that I don't forget big things or forget kind of persistent tasks that get lost to the daily grind, I tend to use that as just a place where I just know that I've been able to put stuff. In the past, I've used every list app you can think of. I've tried some of the in the getting things done craze of the late aughts. I tried a few of those systems and kind of always wound up. I always wound up finding that they took more time than I would use to actually do the things. That by the time I was correctly using their system to tag and organize everything correctly, I probably could have just gotten done the little things that I needed to do.
Yeah.
Personally, I think I've identified I'm a more productive person if I can get four tiny things. And by that, I mean pick up the sock, right? Or just wash that dish. If I can get four of those done, then I'm more likely to get done one of the big things that's been on my list forever. And so I don't know if I was necessarily built for some of the – I'm sure that there are some very, very smart people who use a lot of those GTD things even today. But for me, simple lists that I can write down quick and take off quick is something that I am best with.
I just saw this on – I saw this somewhere online, but someone had an interesting tip. If you use Discord, something you can do just for yourself is just make a Discord server – for you and you alone, and you can make channels for different topics or different sorts of information that you want to group together, and it lets you sort stuff, and it'll do a little bit of file hosting. That is a really interesting idea to just make a, you know, basically a community page, but just for yourself. So you're, you know, organizing information or jotting stuff down. You know, if you're the type of person who is in that program a lot, you know, having, because I'll do that on Slack. Slack gives you like your own channel that you can send messages to yourself. And I'll use that for things I have to type up or whatever. But that, I saw that, and that was like a really like great idea.
You know, in the 80s and the 90s, there were all those different systems. You know, remember day runners? You know, day runners were those like, you know, little planners to sort of plan stuff. And then Franklin Covey came out with this whole system. And I had a friend Jeff. Remember Jeff? Mm-hmm. Jeff was this guy that was into all these sort of stuff, like all these different how to get your life organized, how to like, you know, plan things, whatever. And it became, it's almost like, it's kind of like a mini cult unto itself, because people trying to manage different things. And there's all sorts of different, you know, you scale up from what does an individual do to like, you know, there's all sorts of different, there's Scrub now, there's Active Project Man, there's all these different systems and stuff to try to figure out how do we manage these kinds of things. And I've seen these things come and go. I've seen some systems work for some people, whatever. And for myself, being a creative, trying to figure out how to balance a bunch of different things, and what I've tried over time for managing my own individual projects to time management, I would say I'm horrible at time management overall. Like, I focus on one thing at a time and I just put all my time into it. But as far as making sure things get done, I do feel very good about my ability to see things finished. And so, you know, I use two things primarily. One is I use the Notes app on my iPhone for quick notes, to make notes if something needs to be done. And then for project management, I use one of these little notebooks. I went from composition books to, I use these now, which are pretty good.
It's like a Moleskine style.
Yeah, it's kind of like that. I take this with me, and generally, like, if I have a project, I know, like, this is a big project I'm going to continue it on, I do that. And so I can do books, and I can do software in here. So I keep one of these things with me. It's got the little bookmarker thing, so I can keep track of where I am.
Yeah, back at my old job, I would go through sketchbooks, and that would just be it. I would just keep lists of the things I needed to do in there. And so It could be both a to-do list and also a repository for information or notes or anything.
Yeah, whatever it is, you need a thing that you go back to and you can't avoid. That's the critical thing. The hard part about an app or a thing like that is it's easy to ignore an app, or if the notifications become a little annoying, to turn them off and to walk away from it. You know, the ideal thing is in the real world, whatever that may be, you know, you have an assistant, or somebody says, by the way, you've got this thing coming up, you need to do this kind of thing. And if you hire this assistant, you can't really tell them to shut up, and they'll figure out ways to be persistent and what to do. With apps and other systems like this, if you find yourself ignoring them, the problem is that you have the ability to ignore that. What I love about a physical book is that it's not in my phone. It's not in the place where it's most likely to lead to distractions and things that pull me away from it. I sit down at my computer. I put this thing next to me. I open up to whatever I'm working on. And it's there. I go to lunch. I take this with me. I have this with me. So everybody's going to have their own answer to that. But, you know, I find that for me, it's keeping track of my project and my notes, making notes on these things. And that's, you know, diaries. That's what a diary was for. You know, hundreds of years ago, people do a diary. It wasn't just what happened. It's things, I'm scheduled a meeting to meet with so-and-so. I'm going to go do this, things like this. Just keep an accounting of it. Write it down somewhere. And I have this habit, and it's funny, my girlfriend kind of finds it amusing or annoying, is that I say, like, oh, when I get home, I'm going to do blank, blank, blank. You know, I'm going to go do this, 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 or this. And that's sort of my declaration of what I'm going to do. And so when I get home, it's very clear to me what I'm going to do. Sunday night, I will tell you something I do every single Sunday night is I set my alarm for 11:20 a.m. this morning for Monday morning. I always set my alarm in advance for 11:20, so no matter what I'm doing, I'll get a notification. I know what I'm doing. I use my alarms like crazy. When I go on a trip, I'll have like five different alarms set, not because I sleep past them, but because like I'll have one alarm that tells me wake up, another alarm tells me when it's time to go to the airport, you know, or when to do this movie theater, go to see a movie last night. You know, our ticket's at 9:15. I know 9 a.m. I'll be around where the theater is. I set a 9 p.m. alarm. Mm-hmm. So I use those things to sort of just notify me. But
and if you're really like one of those meticulous sorts of people who wants to both keep like a record of everything that they do, but also, you know, wants to plan stuff out. Brant just got one of these maybe a couple months ago, And the sort of detail and the way that they're formatted is wild. These Hobonichi Techo planners, have you heard of these?
No.
They're these little planners out of Japan, and they've got, you know, day schedules and then weekly schedules on it, and you know, you can fill out like exactly everything that you've done, and they have a lot of different types, and there's supposed to be like a high level planner if you are like really, really into being like meticulous with planning your days out on paper.
Yeah, you know, and there's time management and project management, you know, and those are two things too that I think sometimes it can be conflated, in that time management is, you know, I'm not as concerned with personally with my time management as much as my project management, mm-hmm. because for me, I need, you know, I just need to know that I'm going to be working on the right thing and consistently coming back to it. But yeah, like I make notes of like to-dos in here. Like if I'm working on a software project, I'm like, oh, tomorrow I need to do like these are not say don't say when I said these are the things I need to do so I can pick up where my work left off, you know?
Yeah.
So look up I've never heard of the techno planner thing before.
Yeah. And it's like a page is every day. So they're, but it's like A6 size, I think. So it's like the really thin paper. But it's all like in a, you know, showing up as a grid, and you get boxes, and it'll give you, you know, little things like the moon and whatever.
Yeah. It's a lot like Day Runner, you know, a lot like that was.
But, you know, but it's fascinating because the idea that it's lighter and thinner is kind of a fairly key to, like, you know, the best camera to take a great picture is the camera you got on you, right? And the camera that you yep. know how to use. And I think that's kind of the same principle for any kind of organization, is figure out something that works for you. And there's no shame in running through a million of them. There's no shame if one doesn't work, then don't think that you're necessarily broken, right? The point is, if it's working, it's working. Put more effort and time into it. But everybody's got different habits, and these are habits that have been formed a long time ago, that sometimes it works going against the grain, sometimes it doesn't. It really depends on your personality.
Yeah, and it's stick with it long enough to know if it's working or not working because of itself or because of you. And also identify, is it time management or project management? I think that's one of the things that you can clock in every day and a project won't move forward because the project isn't being managed. And, you know, I have some projects, people are like, well, how long will it take? I'm like, I don't know. Like, I really don't. I would have a naive understanding of the scope of this thing. Mm-hmm. I understand better, like, now, like, if you asked me 7 years ago, how long will it take you to write a book? I'm like, I don't know. Now I know. You know, now I have a realistic idea. If it's within my wheelhouse, it's this kind of thing, I know how long it'll take. But I had to learn, making notes and going through different ways, from note cards to journals to legal pads to all of that, you know.
Yeah.
I just went through and cleaned up a bunch of stuff, and I found tons of legal. I found all the different formats at which I used to make notes on stuff, you know, and how it evolved over time.
And the most like helpful thing that you can do is make a habit of it or make mm-hmm. some sort of muscle memory. I have an app on my phone. It's just a word processor app that I use to, when I need to jot down something more significant than, you know, one line of text or whatever, you know, I know to pull it up and it's right here in this folder, and like I moved it, and so I actually don't know where it is right now, but I know where the folder is, and I tap the button and it's very quick to start a new page, and I type my thing and I'm in and I'm writing, and I'm at least putting the information somewhere, you know, if it's something that I need to remember or keep for a later day, that muscle memory creates, you know, it shortens the time between having the thought and losing and putting it away before it's lost.
And, you know, no system is going to give you the motivation. No system is going to give you the energy to do things that you don't want to do. And I think often sometimes people are trying to they know on an intellectual level I need this, but on an emotional level they don't want to do it. They don't want to get up early to work on a project. They don't want to find the extra time to do it. And that's the hard part, is that no system can fix somebody who doesn't. It can fix it if you don't want to do it.
Yeah. And, you know, like Justin mentioned this earlier, but finding little things that you know you will feel better having done is really important. Like the other night, I was about to go to bed, and I was like, well, I should probably do the dishes and set these off, because it will be good to know that I've cleaned up the kitchen and I've cleaned dishes in the morning. And, like, you know, it doesn't take that long. It was just I never, I hadn't done it because I didn't need to do it.
Bryce, that is an amazing bit to flip. That to go from the I will put it off to what I will get it done now. Like if I walk past, you know, I used to be like, I'll wait till later. If I walk past the sink and there are dishes in there, I wash them. You know, like there's things, like there's some things I haven't flipped that bit on, but that is an amazing one of just in general of let me get this all done now. Let me just get this all out of the way so it's not looming and in my head and taking up headspace.
Yeah. And like once you, for part of it, like this was like last night for me, it was like, I know I will feel good having done this. Mm-hmm. Like you need to like trust that you will feel good having something completed, especially small things, which are can be menial or rote and are very like, I'm going to clean up the dishes or I'm going to put my clothes away and I'm going to feel better knowing that I don't have clothes everywhere. And I enjoy looking at this room when it's not, you know, so dirty. Like getting into trusting the feeling of accomplishment afterwards is helpful in that too.
Yeah. I heard a great phrase. It was like, if it's not worth doing right, then maybe it's not worth doing.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing to it. It's like, well, you know, just being able to say no too. Here's a very, this is a very interesting question from one of our listeners. And he asks, he says, once you come out of the scene with your creative endeavor and that endeavor happens to be linked up with the self-help category, can you ever really undo that label and just do your creative work? Back on this question, my therapist recently requested that I be a speaker for her class at a university where she teaches psychology courses. I was diagnosed with bipolar 1 in early 2017, and she has told me that I have a way of telling my story with such articulation that it could help people better understand the disease. She wants me to also consider drafting a TED Talk, all in preparation to compose a book that she thinks I should write. I'm a creative person. I'm concerned that if I go public with my experience and self-awareness, that I will forever be branded in the self-help category, and I might also lose opportunities for making art professionally. Thoughts on the self-help card? So, there's a lot here.
Yeah.
I'm going to say this right now. Your therapist has different motivations than you do. Your therapist's goal is to try to help fix people and often just to help people fix themselves, okay? That is your therapist's goal. That is your therapist's job. That is the most important thing to them is this. And here's an example of you who are somebody who's been able to articulate what you went through and what you're able to do. And they like this example and that could help them to their purpose of trying to help people, whatever. It's great. You're an artist. You want to create. You want to make things. While, yes, this could possibly be helpful to other people, it could be instrumental to these people, but is that your primary drive? And I wouldn't be I would wonder, one, there's a pro and con to this, okay? The one is being attached to self-help, not necessarily bad by itself, but do you want to go public with what you've gone through? And maybe there's reasons to say that, no, I don't want to do this because you don't want to deal with the prejudice of people. You know, mental illness is still one of these things that is just, it's heavily stigmatized, unfairly so. It doesn't get the attention that it should be. And every time I read an article about, you know, somebody in a newspaper or somebody who, you know, hear this post, oh, this person did this crazy thing on an airplane. I'm like, how do we know this person wasn't dealing with, you know, instability issue or something? Like, how do we know that's not the case? Why are we making fun of this person or whatever when it could be any of us, you know, and not, you know, whatever. And so there is this poor understanding of these issues. And so I would say that number one is that's a thing to think about is like, yeah, do you want that to be a label that you are stuck with? Because yes, that is a thing that going forward in future situations and whatever, if that's what you're known for, internet never forgets. And so that's the con. The con is that, like, yeah, you're in the self-help category, you're a person who's talked about what you've done through, which could be very helpful to people. So that's the pro is it could be extremely helpful to other people, could be very helpful for it. And it might lead to opportunities. It might lead into, hey, this is a thing that's of interest for me. This is a thing that because I was able to talk about this, I got invited to speak and do things that I wasn't invited to do before. That's the other side of it. You know, my thing is you have to say what is more important is your art and what you're trying to do more important, what you're doing with your creativity, you know, and maybe this is you focus on your creativity and your art now, and then later on you bring your message and you help people out with that. That might be my strategy is say, yes, you could do this. Now's not the time. That would be my inclination.
Yeah, you know, the person is worried about being branded a self-help sort of person, and I think that I don't know. I would say
I don't think
you would be. You should have that should be something to worry too much about. I mean,
I don't think that label's problem. But if this person he talks about, you know, the idea of talking about being bipolar and dealing with it, that's that would be my concern. Is there's one the self-help thing, that's fine. But if you're going to be talking about, hey, I've dealt with this mental issue and I've come forward to talk about this, that would be my concern. Would be like, hey, not every in the perfect world, people aren't going to judge me. Sure. But we don't live in that world, and people are going to have biases, and people are going to have, and that would be my concern about this.
Well, I think that was their concern specifically, was like, if I am doing self-help stuff, will that affect my professional art career? And I mean, I don't know. I don't have a good sense. Justin, do you have any temperature check?
Yeah.
On this?
I mean, I think in terms of, you know, I would say that number one, when it comes to therapists, you know, you do need to be careful. This is another one of those things where you need to make sure that you are vibing exactly and you are getting a benefit from your relationship with them. I would say that in terms of, you know, you need to be comfortable doing what you are doing. And the better that you are, the healthier that you are, I think the more you are going to do in general, the more productive that you are going to be. So, I don't know. I'm obviously somebody for whom I think honesty and forthrightness has kind of, you know, been something that I've tried to adhere to. I think that the more complex a journey is, the more people can understand and relate to it on some level, be it through themselves or friends and family. So I would encourage you to just be open and honest and to be both in your work and in your personal life, strive to live healthier, because I think it will be rewarded.
But the question is, should he write about this? And should this be part of the narrative right now? Should he go out and speak on this? Should he put together a TED talk and talk about, hey, this is how that's, it's one thing to be open and say with my friends and what this is. It's another thing to say that, hey, I'm now going to be the person that's going to talk about this mental health issue that I went through. And this is going to be the thing that this is going to be my brand.
Yeah. I mean, I would say if that's something that you feel is an essential part of your journey that you want to continue to talk about, then the answer is yes. If it's not, then no. You are not obligated to be. You're not obligated to make that your product.
Right. Like, you don't need to, you know, you've got someone telling you, oh, you could give a speech on us and then you could write a book. And if you don't want to do that, then you shouldn't. Like, just because someone says you can or you will be good at something doesn't even mean that you'll be good at it.
And you know, here's the challenge. One, it's like, oh, write a book and a TED Talk. Well, great. Those are aspirational things. One, there's TEDx, there's TED. Those are aspirational things. Write a thing and go do this. To what end? Because you're doing the TED Talk, you're doing this thing. It's not a thing while trying to get to that really pays for itself. Write a book until the book is published. No money in doing that thing. And certainly it serves the goal of your therapist, what they're trying to do. And you're asking, hey, I've got my art and I want to do the self-help thing by itself. Not a bad category. It's not going to, I don't think that'll hinder you at all being attached to that. But if your story and your journey of what you've gone through and what your background is part of that, and you're still at a point where you want to decide how much of that becomes your brand, I'd say like, well, that's the thing. It will become your brand. It will become part of what you are. And there may be good points, good reasons for that. I'm, you know, of the mind, table this, you know, put this on the shelf for a year. Think about it. You know, how do you feel about it a year from now? Mm-hmm. Focus on your art, focus on what else you're doing, and come back to it in a year and go, okay. Because like I said, your therapist is excited, whatever, because, you know, seeing your progress, you're building articulated. It's very, very great. You have to separate very much what you want. And I'm sure your therapist's great, but I have seen from personal friends who've gone through stuff, I've seen some really gross examples of negligence and bad I've seen so many examples of really bad therapy. Things were unprofessional that just didn't, that I can only imagine how much is out there. That's what scares me about a lot of this. It's just, it's like, I can name numerous examples of like, yeah, this friend with this and this person told them to use this illegal drug. This person did this, next thing you know, because of the therapist, they were involved in this cult and this stuff and all this. So I'm very wary of, hey, my therapist thinks I should do this thing that's outside of what I went to go talk to them about.
Or at the very least, like,
nothing made me question therapy more than going out and partying with a bunch of people who are in school to be therapists. Like, yeah. They were, I mean, and I'm not going to make a big sweeping generalization about the profession. No, I won't. All I'll say is the therapists are workout machines for your brain and your emotions, and they're not all healthy. And if you're not using it right, then you're going to get at worst, you're going to waste time. At best, you're going to waste time. And at worst, you're going to hurt yourself. Mm-hmm. You need to find a professional who is good, and B, somebody who is good for you. Like there's not, talk therapy is not a thing that is a straight line. It is about understanding who you are so you can unravel your yourself. And if your therapist is pushing you into something that you don't feel that you're ready for or will benefit you, then I think that is a red flag. In general, whenever you're going and paying for something, even if it is something that is as personal and invasive as therapy, but I would look at it the same as like college or something like that. If you're paying for it and you're not getting better, the whole reason why you're there is for you to get better and to continue to evolve as a person. If that's not happening and other things are happening and things that are distracting and interesting and maybe have a pot of gold at the end of that rainbow, be wary of it. The reason why you're there is so you can continue to evolve as a person. And if that's not happening, this isn't a problem with you. This is a problem with them. Then as professionals, that profession is there to move you along in a healthy mental capacity.
And, you know, going back to some advice Andrew just gave, is like, if you wait, if this is something you would like to do and you're worried about it affecting your creative, whatever, professional arts, like, go and do that first. Like, your story about, you know, overcoming being diagnosed bipolar will only continue to be supplemented by your further advances in the field that you really want to do. Then, because your history is not changing, and you are able to build on that story until you feel more comfortable with, you know, being someone who gives talks on stuff like this.
I think distance will help us to, you know, table it for a while to think about it, because it's just, we live in an age where once you don't really get to reinvent yourself now. And people brought up pen names don't last, you know, those things. Just if somebody wants to find their way through something, they will. Mm-hmm. And it may be the best thing in the world, is because it's part of your narrative. I don't know. I would say that it's a thing to think about very carefully. And my advice is, take time, think about this. You're still very close to, you know, from the dates as early 2017, you know, of going through the diagnosis to dealing with this and stuff. I think you need to figure out how life works for you for right now. And I'm the opinion of, like, I want my life to be the things I make, not the things that made me, you know. I want to be the things that I decide to do, not the things that happen to me, you know, and then take a step aside and, you know, then figure that out. That'd be it's my advice.
Yeah.
For what it's worth. And by anybody who's, you know, again, therapy, dealing with things, absolutely is very, very helpful. But understand that there are good therapists, there are bad therapists. Don't be afraid to decide you want to go talk to somebody else. Don't feel that you're, you know, the part of the problems of therapy is often there's this, you know, I've seen this, like, you know, you work out with somebody like, I feel this obligation, but maybe not getting the best advice. I'm afraid I don't want to make them unhappy by leaving. And that's one of the biggest problems. It's hard in therapy, is that it's very hard to say, this therapist isn't right. I need to change. We don't even want to do that with doctors, which is just purely objective, you know.
Mm-hmm. But, and also it's like, it's a painful thing to think about, because oftentimes the idea of getting therapy is painful. And, mm-hmm. and, you know, it involves a lot of breaking through barriers. And if you've done all that, And then you found somebody and you started going and you realize, oh, this isn't exactly what I want. The idea of then doing that all over again is daunting. While I do think, number one, it's worth it to investigate it. And I would suspect that it will not be as much. Once you've done it, it will get less difficult to find a new person. And now you're going to know more. It's going to be demystified. Mm-hmm. You're not going to want... I mean, a friend of mine who I've known since middle school, who just randomly happened to move out to the East Bay as well, periodically we'll go get a couple drinks and catch up. And he just started going to therapy. And he, most of the last like 3 months that he's been going to this therapist have literally just been undoing problems with his last therapist. And really? He feels a million times better. And he is now realizing that a lot of the advice that he got, a lot of the stuff that he was given was just harmful, was actively not good for him. And now he is at least dealing with somebody that is like, oh, yeah, no, that was bad advice. There's such a thing as bad advice from a therapist. There's such a thing as bad therapists. There's bad people at the deli counter. There's bad people who are you know, telemarketers. There's bad therapists. It is a job like any other job. There are good people. There are bad people. There are mediocre people. And even beyond that, when you're dealing with something as complex as your own mental health, where oftentimes it's a really hard thing to figure out because we're not honest with what it is, right? Like, we make our own tangled vines around the problems that hold us back, that a good therapist is going to delve through, that is going to artfully try to have you unwind it by yourself. That's not an easy thing, and it's not one size fits all. So please feel free to shop around. Feel free to understand that, trust yourself, that I don't feel like I'm getting better.
Yeah, I mean, well, in this case, he seems happy about the therapist advice. I would just say that don't let the therapist's agenda become your own. And they could be the most well-intentioned person and think this is the right path for you. And maybe it is. But I think if there's a hesitation, uncertainty, I think time is the best thing here, is to see where, because again, this person's life, the therapist's life, is she deals with people dealing with mental health issues. That is her life. This is what this is. Every day is about this. And the problem too is that you're a patient. You're not a colleague. You're a patient. You're a subject. And patients get categorized very, very differently. And it's that's the other part of it too, is, and often many of these therapists are patients themselves too. That's the other thing, is that you will then, do you want that label? Is that a label you want? Forget the self-help label. Is that bigger label one that you want? Not, it's fine. Be your friends and be open to talk about these things. That's absolutely encouraged. But to the world at large, your Twitter handle or whatever, do you want that to be the label? Because also it's going to open you up to criticisms and other sorts of things, that's going to be the first point at which people are going to want to criticize.
Yeah.
So it's my thought. Maybe it's horrible advice, you know, but... pragmatically speaking, time. Think about it. Cool. All right. Any questions?
You guys have picks?
Anything else? Picks? Any picks?
Yeah. I liked Black Klansman. I have some very pointed thoughts on the final 2 minutes of Black Klansman.
Oh?
I think it is fully disconnected from the movie. I think... there's not going to be many people who, well, look, he's Spike Lee. I'm not going to shock you to say that he wears his politics on his sleeve. I think that Spike Lee's, you could make an argument that with Get Out and Sorry to Bother You and Blind Spotting and literally every trailer before the Black Klansman movie was a movie about racial violence, that Spike Lee is somebody who was fairly eloquently exploring a lot of these topics as far back as, you know, Do the Right Thing. If you look at Do the Right Thing now as a movie, I think it's something that is almost brings a humanity that to a lot of the kind of issues that we are dealing with. And a lot of the movies that were trailers before this were about shootings, police shootings, and Do the Right Thing is a movie kind of about, I think very artfully, about the day before and all the people and the stories that kind of spun around that. And I think that you can make an argument that Spike Lee is one of the more influential filmmakers of this moment right now, considering where we are. That being said, as I think has been a valid criticism of Spike Lee movies in the past, certainly the present and probably the future, sometimes he can get a little overboard on some of it, and I think it detracts from the movie. So I will say that the movie itself is a really credible, interesting, well put together, well, extraordinarily well shot buddy comedy between our main character, who I didn't know was Denzel Washington's son until after I had seen the movie, and Adam Driver, and Steve Buscemi's brother, who I thought was Steve Buscemi the entire movie. It is really, really great. But man, there's a decision made literally right before you walk out of the theater that I thought was anywhere between gratuitous or disrespectful.
Ooh, all righty. I have a pick. I raved about this probably a few months ago, and they've put out a sequel, and it is Picross S2. They went and did it again, fellas. Picross is a logic game. It's a logic puzzle game, and you fill out rows and columns of X's and marks, and you come up with little pictures. You draw little pictures. Picross S2 is a lot of the same, but they also have this thing called Clip Picross. So as you fill out regular puzzles, you also unlock these other larger puzzles that are part of a larger series, and once you put all of those together, they come together to form this huge image, and there are a couple of those, and it's got some multiplayer stuff. The multiplayer is really interesting if you get someone who also knows Picross logic stuff, because then it's just a race to see who can get the most, you know, right marks on any given puzzle. I think it's really it's a very relaxing game for me, and I know I'm going into it having very recently played the first one, and thinking and like getting through it even quicker just because all the logic stuff and the way the math works out is still kind of fresh in my mind. So that's Picross S2 on the Switch.
I'm looking at this and I'm like, I feel like the person that they just presented like the alien code to, and like, we need to decipher this, and I have no idea what's going on. And I'm like, I'm too old and just too dumb to understand.
It has a really good tutorial in the game. Mm-hmm. It teaches you not just like the basics of how to work it and what the columns and the rows and the numbers mean, but also like it walks you through the logic of like, okay, well, if you have a piece here and you know that this is for this number and you have this many spaces behind it, then it can't, you can mark, you know, these spaces because it can't possibly be these.
Let me read from the Wikipedia. Nonogram. Nonograms, also known as pit cross or grid loops, are picture logic puzzles in which cells in a grid must be colored or left blank according to the numbers at the side of the grid to reveal a hidden picture. In this puzzle type, the numbers are a form of discrete tomography that measures how many unbroken lines of filled-in squares are in a very given row and column. Man, and this is why I recuse myself from ever being able to figure out if anything's going to be big or not. I have no – I'm like – yeah, you got a real big hit on your hands, and then millions of people play it. Like, I remember Sudoku. I'm like, who would find that fun? Sure. A lot of people, Andrew. A lot of people.
Well, what I enjoy about this Picross S line of games compared to some of the other ones that are out there is that it does give you really, really good tutorials if you just have never played these sorts of things before. It does a very good job of, like, ramping up the difficulty really organically. And it like it just feels simple and fresh. You know, after I beat Picross S, I went and there's another Picross game out there on the market, and it's a little kludgy. It's the sort of thing where you play something really high quality for a while, and then you jump over to another very similar thing, and you realize all the little quality of life details that are just not there. So the, you know, it's a It's an elegant puzzle game, that's what I'll say.
Well, beyond my comprehension. my pick from the last show. It's the Tesla Model 3. Highly recommended. If you're in if you're out there looking for in the market for an electric car, love it. You know, I've been using to charging it. There's a supercharger station at the mall, Burbank Mall, not too far from me. They got 20 chargers, which at night they're still pretty wide open. And so I charged it. I did a little destination charging last Monday when I went to Malibu, and then basically supercharged it at the charger, and then charged it up again last night. So like once a week or so has been fine for me, and very happy.
Do you have a charger at your place in your garage?
No, I do not. I don't. But I live in there's a parking lot or a mall across the street from me, a strip mall that has like four chargers if I want to just plug it in at night and charge it there.
Oh, interesting. So. Okay.
But I can go to the supercharger in like in 30 minutes, whatever. It's like mostly charged. So.
Oh, yeah, because the superchargers are like the very fast charging proprietary stuff. Yeah. Very cool. Yeah.
That's my pick. All right, cool. Gentlemen, it's been after.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.